Living 1951, in cooperation with the 20th Century Fund, presents the 12th in a special transcribed series of programs entitled The People Act, designed to show how your fellow Americans are uniting in democratic ways to solve for themselves the problem of living. These stories are assembled and produced by NBC's special program unit, Living 1951. Today's program, Red Clay and Teamwork. Your field reporter, Elmore McKee.
The setting of the report we make to you today is Carroll County, Georgia. In recent years, the people of Carroll have experienced what has been called an unbroken chain of successes. Yet only yesterday, they will tell you they were in the doldrums. The secret of the change? The discovery of the power that lies in a word of two letters, the word we. That you may hear a truly heartening tale from Georgia, much of it as recorded by the people of Carroll County themselves, here is your narrator, Ben Grauer.
Greetings, America. To Georgia, land of the brown thrasher and home of the Cherokee rose, to the red hills that form Carroll County, on whose farms and in whose communities lived some 37,000 people back in the mid-30s, came two men, an educator and a pastor. Let us begin this story by entering first with the educator.
May I give you a lift?
Yeah, sure thing. Getting weary jerking this thumb.
Climb in. Where to?
Anywhere I can locate what I'm looking for.
And what might that be?
Well, my baby's mouth all broken out with a rash. Yours a mess.
So, you're looking for a doctor, huh?
No, sir. I hear tell some folks can cure it away with tea made out of alum and sage, so I'm hunting me a conjure woman.
Into this corner of Georgia, then, where conjure women were not unknown, came the educator to a new job. Head of a small agricultural and mechanical school near the county seat of Carrollton. As he looked with new eyes about the surrounding countryside, he saw and heard more that surprised him in the condition of the schools. At Sand Hill, the citizens confessed,
"No, sir, we ain't never got around to finishing our school. Seems like we kind of got ourselves crossed up. Lots of people won't even speak to each other now."
And not far from Sand Hill at Oak Mountain, almost in the shadow of his new campus, teacher Effie McGuire told him what it was like when she first came, told him in these words we later recorded.
"There was a gully before the door and a tree that had almost washed away. There were no flowers or shrubs. The inside was dark and gloomy with no color at all, no pictures or anything. Children had to tote water from a neighboring house since we had no water facilities."
And the words Miss McGuire chose to sum it up made a sentence that seemed to speak not only for her own, but for all the schools the educator saw.
"There were just a few books. All in all, it was one of the poorest schools I ever saw."
Troubled by these conditions and seeing that he could not hope to influence the child unless he could first influence the community, our educator acts.
"Wilson, I'm going to start right now to change one thing."
"What's that, sir?"
"The prevailing idea that what's everybody's business is nobody's business."
Determined then to make it his business, he sends his college staff into the surrounding area. Members of a faculty which eventually became a junior college in the university system of the state. To Sand Hill, where the school remained half finished, because, as they put it, the people had got themselves crossed up. One of the staff went into the fields to talk to the farmers as they plowed.
"And that's about the whole story, Mr. Timley. What do you think?"
"Well, sir, what you say is the seed of truth, sir."
"Yes?
But how are we going to finish the school if we can't get people together and don't have the money?"
"Well, we'll advance you the money to get started if Sand Hill will float a bond issue."
"What?"
"That's right. We'll take your word that you'll pay us back and you'll have your school ready for fall."
Thus prodded, Sand Hill uncrosses itself. Sand Hill floats a bond issue. Sand Hill finishes its school in time for fall. With Sand Hill going strong, at Oak Mountain, typical of the teachers who had been trained at the college, was this one who went to work in her own way.
Children! Children! Don't forget to tell your folks that I'm expecting them on Saturday for a painting bee. We're going to make our school look real pretty and nice.
But my folks ain't never been.
Haven't been.
My folks haven't never visited school before, teacher.
Well, you tell them your teacher's looking for them on Saturday.
And they came Saturday, surprised that they were wanted. The men folk painted and the women folk prepared a fish fry. And people who once hardly ever spoke to each other now worked together and liked it. And when that night, as they were leaving, much friendlier than when they'd come, a farmer approached and saw his teacher hostess to the door.
Well, Mr. Gilby, I guess we're the last ones.
Aren't you going to lock the door, Miss McGuire?
What for?
Well, we always locked it before. You know how it is. No good people breaking in.
Well, we are not going to lock the door anymore, Mr. Gibbs. You just tell anybody who wants to use the school, fine, as long as they take good care of it. Good night.
And never again was there any trouble with vandalism. Thus did the educator, first of the two so important to our story, begin. While he did his job, our second man came to Carroll County from a big city church in the north, for this second man was a pastor.
You ask if I will be happy here. Well, I guess I don't have to tell you that I'm always happy where I'm needed. These people are having a hard struggle, are divided, and in need of help. I think the practice...
Besides the disunity the pastor saw in Carroll County, he also saw hope. Saw it in little things such as, well, the time in the midst of depression when the last of Carroll's banks shut its doors and Carroll's businessmen proved the stuff of which they were made.
All right, gentlemen, shall we put it to a vote? I'll ask the secretary to read the motion.
It is moved that we seek to reorganize and reopen the bank by asking the depositors to cancel off 2/3 of their bank balances.
Right. Now, with the understanding on our part that we, the trustees of the bank, won't take a penny out of the bank ourselves until we paid back every depositor, every dime of every dollar he had coming to him.
All in favor?
Aye.
Guess that makes 100%.
Could there be no hope, the pastor asks himself, where men feel like this? Encouraged, he makes his way among the people, and one day he stops at the Oak Mountain School. He puts a question to the children.
Now then, children, how many of you have ever been to Sunday school?
What Sunday school?
The pastor explains and adds,
now that you know what Sunday school is, how many of you think you'd like to go?
To go all right, but how much do you have to pay to get in?
So at Oak Mountain, where there was no Sunday school, the pastor started a Sunday school, admission free, and in the doing of it, planted a seed of whose ripening you shall hear later. But meanwhile, he moved in other directions too. The sound to which you are listening is the sound of a mill whistle in Carrollton, a cotton mill. Between the owner of this mill and the people who worked for him to augment their farm income was a chasm, the same kind of abyss that seemed to divide all of Carroll County. The mill owner had an old, empty storehouse, and in his mind's eye, the pastor saw in that storehouse...
A library. We could only turn it into a library for the children of the mill workers.
Slowly, a spark is kindled. A spark that suddenly bursts into flame here.
I'll be glad to give my workers that storehouse for the kids. In fact, I'll even pay to have it renovated.
And here.
We'll collect books.
And here.
We'll loan you a librarian from the college to direct the program.
And here.
We'll encourage it by tying in the program with our city and county schools.
And it is done, America. And when all these people see what the magic of working together can do, then comes the birthday of the big idea.
You know, we ought to do more of this. Ought to stick together and follow through on things.
Joe's right. What we need is a A sort of a rallying place where we can all work for the good of the community. Not only for little immediate things, but for long-range plans for the whole county.
Said the pastor to all this.
Why not? Why not a council, neighbors? A sort of service council for the whole county. Instead of each of us hoeing his own row. Let's cultivate our garden together.
How would it work?
Through, well, we might call them panels. We could have a welfare panel, for instance, to unite our different social agencies.
And an industrial panel to investigate new possibilities. And an agriculture panel, and an education and recreation panel, and a religious panel. Each operated by a committee of citizens and directed by a board made up of the chairman of all the panels. This is what Carroll County created, America. And this is what Carroll County called
the Carroll Service Council.
So, pooling its resources, sparked by the new service council, Carroll County begins to forge its unbroken chain of success.
Alec, as a farmer, would you consider trying something else besides cotton?
Sure would, if I could find a market for it.
Ever thought of peppers?
Peppers?
Yeah, pimento peppers. We found a company interested in buying what we can raise. Says if we put 2,500 acres in crops, they'll bring their processing and canning plant into the county.
The boll weevil don't crave peppers, does it?
Well, maybe not hot peppers.
Well, I guess you can count on me for an acre or so. Nothing like trying something the weevil don't crave.
Today in Carroll County, 1,000 acres are planted to pimento peppers. There's also a new broiler and a dairying industry. With a future made promising by diversified agriculture, today men who love the land, men like farmer Alexander whom we visited, can lean back and record words like this.
I enjoy the farm life so much that I wouldn't exchange it for any other work that I might be able to do. I'm my own boss on the farm, and I'm a lover of nature. I like to think that I'm the means of helping to produce something with the aid of the sunshine, the showers, and the tilling of the soil. I just like to think that by me being out in the fields and planting and cultivating the crops, that I've been the means of helping to produce something that mankind needs.
And not only the agriculture panel, but all the other panels have met success. Carroll's industries have grown to 40, give work to over 4,500 people in the county. A grain elevator is underway. A hospital, too, has replaced an inadequate clinic. There's a busy regional library. A bookmobile travels the countryside. And out in the little town's West Georgia College conducts from time to time its college in the country. Where once was a swamp, now lies a beautiful lake for recreation. All won through cooperative action between all groups, including Carroll's active interracial committee. But perhaps the most inspiring link in this chain of successes was forged atop Oak Mountain. Hear this story recorded by the people themselves.
My name is Walt Tyson, and I've been here for around 40 years. And we didn't have any church here, no place to worship, and no place to have our community Sunday school.
Yes, Oak Mountain was a churchless community with a reputation throughout the whole county that, well, one mountaineer describes for us their former Sundays.
On Sundays, I used to didn't have anything to do but maybe get out and get a bottle of whiskey, go fishing, or get into something I shouldn't have.
Big Tom Miggs, who used to run a country store, bears further witness to what it was like on Oak Mountain in those days.
I ran a country store on the old Newland Road for several years. During that time, I've had cars stop there. I want to know where you could buy some whiskey. I said, that's very easy done around Oak Mountain because it's made and sold just over the hill.
This was the climate to which the teacher brought new life to the school, and the pastor to his flock a new love of God. Gradually, among the people united in painting bees and Sunday school, is born the desire for something better. As Reformed Tom Miggs puts it to the parents in a Sunday school meeting,
"Now, I think it's parents' duty to see that their children get to Sunday school once a week. I'd hate to see our children of this day and time grow up as dumb as we older heads."
With their children in mind, Oak Mountain dreams. Dreams of a community center. And with the help of the entire county and the new force that is the Service Council's religion panel behind them, they go to work on that dream. First problem, how to begin. As Mrs. Castleman recalls her conversation with the pastor,
"Mr. Flynn came down to the house here, and we were on the front porch, and we're talking about building a chapel. And I told him, I said, I don't have the money, but I do have the trees. And he said, well, there is the chapel."
Thus, with the lumber growing in their own backyard, they start their center by building a chapel. Student architects come from Georgia Tech, anxious to assist them as a class project. The American Friends Service Committee sends helpers who pitch their tent on the chapel site, and the construction begins. The people themselves do the work. Ross Hunter, whose voice you hear next, is typical of them all.
"Well, I came up every morning about 8 o'clock. Would work till about 12. I'd go home and eat a bite of dinner and then go to my regular job. Started work at 2 o'clock and off at 10. Come in and sleep a while and get up the next morning and come up and do the same thing over."
As Ross and his neighbors labor, they soon hit what threatens the whole dream, the digging of a well for water. Many believe it can't be dug, and so warn Tom Miggs.
"Some of the older heads said that we couldn't get water here on Oak Mountain property. It was part of Stone Mountain. We found the spot and started digging. We went down about 28 feet. We had a big vein of water, but it dried up."
Were the older heads right? But wait.
"We went on down 12 or 15 feet more. We got a big vein of water, everlasting. We put on our chart, well done."
And well done are the words that well sum up the result, America. For there on Oak Mountain, where no church stood before, now rises a handsome chapel. A chapel that J.W. Castleman described to us with reverent pride.
"We are now on the pulpit. This furniture was made out of the original timber, handmade, and on our right is the organ pit where the musical instrument is supposed to be placed. These pews now were given to us by St. Margaret's Episcopal Church in Carrollton. They are possibly 50 or 60 years old, but they are nice. In this corner is the bell, which is used to call the classes together after Sunday school. It's a town crier, and it's got a wonderful tone."
But this is a chapel whose true meaning lies not in its clarion call to worship or its stone and timbers, but rather in the cross that crowns it, piercing the sky for all to see, and the spirit that put it there. It is the spirit found in this prayer of Carson Pritchard on the day of the chapel's dedication.
"Almighty God, we dedicate this chapel to Thee. The timber of these hills, the sweat of our own brows, the help of our friends, all came from Thee, and to Thee we dedicate it all. Keep us close together in purpose and concern for one another, that this hilltop may remain a pleasant place, even in the memory of these our children when they are old. So we dedicate ourselves and our building. Make us and it thine forever. Amen."
Mm-hmm.
as our field reporter, you talked to the people of Carroll County and recorded their story. What further impressions have you to give us?
Well, as we shared the Saturday evening community supper of those friendly Oak Mountain people, whose unity of purpose as neighbors was exemplified when they dug through hard rock to that dependable supply of water, I thought of how, by their united efforts on their own hillsides, they were rediscovering the creative core of the American spirit. The Reverend Dick Flynn, the real-life counterpart of the pastor of our story, put his finger on the essential factor at work when he told us before we left.
We are trying to live together and to work together and to move forward together in a spirit of justice and of sympathy and understanding, so that we may be able to help one another and to work together in behalf of the total life of our community.
In the words of that southern pastor, we find the spirit that animates the outstanding work done by the Service Council of Carroll County, Georgia. Surely this Georgia story has significance for our whole nation. And for comments on this, we turn to a representative of the 20th Century Fund, the research foundation that is collaborating with NBC in producing these programs. He is Mr. Evans Clark, executive director of the 20th Century Fund. Mr. Clark, one of the key figures in our story today is a minister, the Reverend Dick Flynn. I'm wondering if you think that circumstance in itself is characteristic of our American way of doing things.
Indeed I do, Mr. Grower. We are accustomed to giving the widest possible latitude to our church members and our ministers in both civil and religious matters. After all, our country was founded as a haven for men of all races and all creeds. The very first article of our Bill of Rights, the First Amendment to our Constitution, guarantees freedom of religious worship. I think sometimes we take all this too much for granted. But when we look at other countries in the world, as we must these days, and see clergy thrown into prison, churches suppressed, and religion under the heel of government dictatorship, we feel our tradition of religious freedom to be something very real and very precious.
Well, that tradition of freedom has certainly led Americans to worship in their own way, hasn't it, sir?
Yes, I think it's fair to say that in America today, people are offered a wider choice of worship than in any other country on earth. Our 20th Century Fund survey, America's Needs and Resources, showed a total of more than 250 different religious denominations in this country.
As a whole, do the churches seem to be gaining or losing members?
Well, exact statistics are hard to come by, especially for recent years, but our estimate shows that back in 1906, about 40% of Americans were actually members of some church. The most recent estimate we have for our country as a whole shows 50%, one out of every two Americans to be a member of some church.
Where is most of this church membership concentrated, in cities or in the country?
As it happens, most of the churches are in the country. But these are fairly small units, usually. So we find that rural communities have about two-thirds of our churches, but only about one-third of our total church membership.
Yes. I suppose it's often a struggle for many of these smaller rural churches to support themselves financially, just as it's often a struggle for our rural schools to get the support they need.
Yes, and that's why local leadership in these two fields, such as we've heard about in our story today, is so very important.
Right.
As to schools, we have improved our standards of rural schooling very much in recent decades, but we still have a long way to go. Our 20th Century Fund studies show that our rural schools are still generally below the standard of our city schools in the length of the school year, in the quality of instruction they offer, and also in plant facilities.
Which would indicate why citizen support and our nation's resources should be put behind improving our rural schools just as we've improved the output of our farms.
Yes, I was interested in that part of our story dealing with the efforts to get more diversified crops and to improve the yield of farms in Carroll County. Along that line, you know, our country has made some really dramatic advances. For example, Our fund studies show that in a single decade, by the end of the 1930s, we had brought up the average yield of our wheat per acre 40% over what it had been in the 1920s. In the same period, we increased our average yield per acre of hay, potatoes, and 10 leading fruits by about one quarter.
That does indicate progress in our farms, Mr. Clark. And I hope it also indicates that we can go right on producing the great quantities of food we need in our present national emergency, even though thousands and thousands of our young men will be leaving farms to go into the armed services.
Yes, on that point, the record of our experience in World War II is very encouraging. At that time, of course, under the stress of a major war, even larger percentages of our young men went into the service than are going now. Yet, in 1944, at the peak of the war effort, we harvested 10% more acres and produced 20% more crops and livestock products than we did before the war started. And so great was our improvement in agricultural methods in general and our use of farm machinery that we achieved all this increased output while actually using about 17% fewer workers on our farms.
That does indeed give us encouragement about our ability to produce to meet our present needs. Thank you, Mr. Evans Clark, Executive Director of the 20th Century Fund, for those findings that give us some of the national implications of our story of achievement in Carroll County, Georgia.
Living 1951 in conjunction with the 20th Century Fund has presented another in our special series, The People Act. If you wish to receive a copy of today's script or to ask questions pertaining to the possible application of the story of Carroll County, Georgia, to your own community, you're invited to write to the 20th Century Fund, 330 West 42nd Street, New York 18. We repeat that address, the 20th Century Fund, 330 West 42nd Street, New York 18. The fund will be glad to send you a script or put you in touch with an agency that may help you in your situation. Join us again next week when our field reporter will introduce us to some people who put democracy to work in Toledo, Ohio. The People Act is transcribed and produced for NBC and the 20th Century Fund by the Program Unit for Living 1951. The preceding program was transcribed. Your